Climate change has been more prominent in headlines in recent years as temperatures get warmer and more powerful storms affect the world. And that has helped nurture a relatively new genre of fiction, more specifically science fiction, that focuses on climate change and its impact. Tonight at 7 at the Phoenix Art Museum, ASU's Piper Center will host New York Times bestselling author Kim Stanley Robinson. His talk is called The Comedy of Coping, Alarm and Resolve in Climate Fiction. And he joins us for a few minutes. Stan, thanks for being here.
Good. It's my pleasure. Thanks.
Well, let's talk first of all about, I think the perception is that much of science fiction, maybe climate change fiction falls into this as well, is very dystopian. It's, you know, woe is us, we're lost, whatnot. Is that correct? And is that good or bad in your view?
It maybe is correct, and I think it's bad, but pretty natural. Science fiction splits out easily into good futures and bad futures. And so it's utopian fiction expresses our hopes and dystopian fiction expresses our fears. And it's kind of a fearful time. But hope is very persistent. So there is still a utopian strand in science fiction.
Can this kind of dystopian fiction, though, actually lead to more people to be aware and then perhaps lead more likely to solutions or changes?
It's the same as any of our fears. It can spark a good response, or it can just drive you into a despair and a feeling like, well, the things are all going to hell, and so there's nothing I can do, and so you could give up. So I myself am a utopian science fiction writer because there are enough dystopias around from my colleagues.
And is that your natural tendency? You're someone who likes to look on the bright side?
Yes, it is. I was biochemically lucky from my mom, I would say. and then also it's a political position where you stay optimistic in order to try to bash your way forward to a better future. So optimism is also a political choice as well as a kind of biochemical temperament.
So this is a blanket question, but do you think that more people respond to a utopian or a dystopian, or is it somewhere in the middle?
Utopias are rare but famous, and so going back to Sir Thomas More, you can point out 2 or 3 per century that have been seized on and beloved and sparked political movements. In the United States, Edward Bellamy, his Looking Backward from the Year 2000, it spark-plugged the progressive movement of the last turn of the century, mm-hmm. and it gave people a lot of hope and inspiration. And then H.G. Wells, his utopian novels kind of created the post-war social safety net and scientific meritocracy. When they had to rebuild the world after 1945, it was kind of an H.G. Wells vision. Mm-hmm. So utopias are important, even though they're hard. They can be funky and boring. But it's a trick that Ursula Le Guin has taught us with her Dispossessed. You can actually make a good novel out of utopia. So now there's an extra burden, not just to be interesting, but also to be fun.
It's hard to think about utopia being boring since none of us is really used to that, but I suppose that's...
Well, the idea would be the anti-utopians would have said, like with Brave New World, that if you try to make people happy, you're just going to make them all stupid. So there's an anti-utopian strand that comes out of American right wing that says that utopia would be government planning, therefore would be bad, sort of like a Satanism. So utopia does have to make a case for itself as of the people, by the people, for the people.
Well, Stan, let's look at the title of your presentation tonight, The Comedy of Coping. We haven't really talked about comedy at this point. You talk about comedy in the traditional sense of getting people to smile and laugh about this sort of thing that we're dealing with.
Or even more traditional sense, like Shakespeare and the Greeks, mm-hmm. that there will be a good ending or a marriage at the end. And sometimes you could call it a problem comedy. Where it doesn't necessarily be funny, except in a black humor sense. But yes, the thing is that there is going to be climate change. We've already begun it. So then what do we do? Well, then we have to cope. As humans cope with their natural situation, funny things are going to happen. People are still going to get married. Young people are going to grow up thinking, this is the way the world is, and I want to make a good life out of it and find a partner and so on and so forth. So that's the comedy of coping.
Now, finally, when you mention Shakespeare and the Greeks, that makes me think of a chorus, and we're hearing a chorus of people who don't believe, and I don't want to get into the deep politics of this. We just have a few seconds, but we didn't really talk about that much in the utopia versus dystopia. Are people convincible? Are they persuadable at this point, or are those who don't believe in climate change never going to believe in climate change?
Well, people would rather just go down with the ship. It's hard for anyone, including me, to change your ideas once you have them. But I will say that I've been talking about climate change for at least 20 years in my science fiction, and things have changed. It's different now than it was when I began talking about it. When I began, I was the man from Mars. I was a science fiction writer. It was speculative stuff. Now it's absolutely what's happening. It's become a literary genre. It's become something everybody has to talk about. So things have changed, and everybody will eventually get on board with the idea that we're in a new world of, in a new climate that we've created, and that we can alter also to mitigate the problems. And so there's a lot of hope to be had. As soon as you acknowledge the problem, you can begin to solve it.
That's author Kim Stanley Robinson. He's here as part of the ASU Piper Center, and he's going to be presenting the comedy of Coping, Alarm, and Resolve in Climate Fiction tonight at 7 at the Phoenix Art Museum. Stan, thank you.
My pleasure.